You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you and you the best.
Halford and Brough.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from a windowless room in the Kintec Studio Footwears in beautiful Kintec Footwear Studio in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
You're already rattled, aren't you?
A little bit, yeah. We are working, I would classify it as remotely today. We are in the Kintec Footwear Studios, but we're not in the Kintec Footwear Studios. We're having renovations done, so things are a little different. We don't have our large adult sons, Laddie and A-Dog, in front of us, but we're going to try and talk to them anyway. We're going to try and talk to them remotely. So ready, 3, 2, 1. A-Dog, good morning.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning.
Hello.
That's not too bad, everybody. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dallari family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dallari difference today by visiting your nearest Dallari Acura dealer today. I believe I called it the Kintec Studio Footwear this morning. It is the Kintec Footwear Studio. They of the 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Jason, tell them more.
Orthotics Footwear and Kintec. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. What's on the show today, my friend?
We will begin our guest list at 6:30 with James Sharman of the Footy Prime podcast and Sportsnet soccer coverage. Canada 2-0 losers to Uruguay yesterday in their penultimate, yes, penultimate, World Cup friendly before the thing gets officially underway in late November. We will talk to James about the result, about the two-game window, what he saw against Qatar and Uruguay. Obviously, the Uruguay match was the more important of the two and where more takeaways were from. I won't spoil the show. That's why you got to listen later on. We'll go through our analysis, go through James's analysis as well.
I just have a quick question, though.
Okay.
Is Canada one of the few teams that is having one of these warm-ups right before the World Cup? Because I was looking at other teams' schedules, like England has played its last warm-up game. The Americans have played their last warm-up game. Do you have any idea? Or
they are one of... I don't know...
What's Argentina doing, Mike?
Yeah, what is Argentina doing? They beat Jamaica in a friendly yesterday. Leo Messi scored a couple goals. I know that John Herdman, the gaffer for the Canadian team, expressed concern going into the World Cup that a lot of his MLS-based players weren't going to have a lot of match activity prior to the World Cup.
Right. Maybe it was special for them, too, also because they had one canceled.
Exactly.
So maybe they felt the need to have at least one more, and they're just going to play Japan right before, like a few days before their first game against Belgium. That's why I asked.
Right. So in terms of traditional World Cup warm-ups, you don't usually have a friendly 6 days out from your first match. But
right.
Different circumstances for Canada, given all that. So James Sharman is going to join us at 6:30 to talk about all of that. 7:30, Arash Madani from Sportsnet. We're going to talk Jays with Arash. So they failed to catch the Yankees like I won. One day thought they might atop the AL East standings. The Yankees clinched last night with a 5-2 victory over the Jays. You heard the audio there about people piling on Vladdy Guerrero Jr., Buck Martinez, and some others as well. We can talk to Arash about that 5-2 decision. So the Jays are now officially in the wild card mode. The Yanks officially have clinched the AL East, and Aaron Judge is still officially not the Yankees' all-time home run king. I believe it's 7 consecutive games now without a dinger. 4 walks last night, though, so that's something. So we'll talk to Arash about all that at 7:30. 8 o'clock, we're going to talk Canucks with Dan Murphy from Sportsnet. It's actually 8:05 a.m. Dan was very specific about coming on the air at 8:05 a.m.
He does his final group of push-ups at 8:04. So
I asked if he could do 8:06. He said no.
Yeah, 8:03 is his, I believe he does some old-school jumping jacks.
So that voice you heard there, that was Andy trying to talk.
I couldn't hear him.
But I kind of got the gist that you were jumping in there. Look, folks, there may be some technical difficulties along the way, but Jason and I will probably be the predominant voices throughout the show today, and we will lead you through the next 3 hours like we always do, with a series of mistakes and very awkward transitions between topics. Speaking of awkward transitions between topics, what's coming up after Murph today? Well, the Jays are going to continue their series versus the Yankees after losing last night. Jason has scolded me before to not talk about NHL preseason action, but I will say it is the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs. They play tonight across the Sportsnet Network. So again, working in reverse, 8:05 Dan Murphy, 7:30 Arash Madani, 6:30 James Sharman. That is the guest list for today. Okay, let's try this again. A-Dog, Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
We do need to begin today with a very serious story that broke late last night. And I believe we are the first at Sportsnet 650 to address this live as one of our program shows on the air. Three of Vancouver Canucks owner Francesco Aquilini's children, all of whom are now adults, have leveled serious allegations that he abused them when they were younger. And this is according to a lawyer for Aquilini's former wife. This is what was told to a judge on Tuesday. The allegations were made in the context of an application by Talia Aquilini, who divorced her husband in 2013, to have three children, all of whom she says are attending university full-time, continue to be declared to be children for the marriage for the purpose of child support payments.
Yeah, the allegations are really disturbing to hear, and they're the type of allegations you hear, and you go, well, I hope those aren't true. Aquilini has denied the allegations, and it's a messy situation. And Aquilini has not spoken himself to the media, but a statement on his behalf was released. Again, the allegations are really disturbing to hear. And the lawyer for his ex-wife read a few of the statements. The children weren't, it's not like the children were testifying. They are his children. They aren't children, though. So when I say the children, I mean his children. They're adults now. They're in university. They didn't testify, but their affidavits submitted to the court. And Talia Aquilini, her lawyer, read some of those statements. And one of them, for example, was a portion of a letter that one of the siblings had written to Francesco Aquilini in March of 2020. And Mike and I are relying on reports on CBC.ca, the Vancouver Sun, and they, I imagine, had reporters in the courtroom. And here's one of the statements that was read out. Again, this is a letter in March of 2020 that one of Aquilini's children wrote to him. Your relationship with us is a direct consequence of your treatment toward us, whether you like to acknowledge it or not. We all hold many individual accounts of your abuse towards us. I would like to formally state that myself and my siblings wish to have no contact with you, nor would we like you to have access to any of our contact, medical information, or other information regarding our lives. So, the court case is not a criminal case. It is not specifically about the allegations. It is about child support for university. And what Aquilini is saying in his denial of these allegations, I'll read the statement that was released on his behalf. The couple were divorced and they reached a settlement in 2013. Mr. Aquilini has met and will continue to meet any child support obligations required by the law, but he has concerns about the veracity of the information provided in support of financial demands. It is unfortunate that allegations without merit are brought forward for a collateral purpose. He will have nothing further to say at this time as the matter is before the courts. In other words, Mr. Aquilini, Francesco Aquilini, is saying that the allegations have no merit. They're being made simply to, as a way to get these child support payments without having to give me information about what the payments are actually for. It is a messy situation. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly what happened. All we know are the allegations, and we know that there's a denial of allegations. It does not seem in dispute, however, that his children wish to have no contact with him. So we are not going to debate this today. This is the type of story where you have to let it play out a little bit. But I do have questions, such as, will we hear from the NHL on these? Again, they are only allegations, but they are serious allegations. The NBA just fined and suspended an owner in Robert Sarver. But that was for workplace misconduct, i.e. that was kind of league business.
Mm-hmm.
Another question that I have, and I don't know if we will hear from the NHL on this. This thing only broke yesterday. I know I actually called up Elliot Friedman last night, and we had a little conversation. And I said, have you heard anything about this? He said, no, I'm just getting caught up on it right now. So I imagine people in the NHL are maybe just getting caught up on this as well. Another question. How does this get resolved now that these allegations are out there? Because once allegations of this sort are out there, people are going to talk on radio stations, on social media. In Aquilini's statement, he said, I'm not going to say anything more because this is a matter before the courts. Yeah, the matter is before the courts, but the court isn't necessarily going to rule on the allegations.
Right.
Because remember, I said, this isn't, the court case isn't really about the allegations. It's not like a child abuse case. It's not a criminal case.
It's a child support hearing.
It's a child support hearing. So I have questions. What happens if they figure out the child support hearing question? Either he pays it, you know, or they figure out some sort of way to get it done.
A resolution.
A resolution to that situation. And yet those allegations are still out there. Does it just go away? Do people just hope it goes away? Or will Francesco Aquilini, who owns one of the most public-facing companies in British Columbia, is he going to have to address this publicly beyond a statement? We all know he's hesitant to speak in public at times, and that's fine. Not to mention there are legal considerations to speaking in public, but I really do wonder how this is going to affect perceptions of this team that he owns. Will it affect business for the club? Nothing's been proven in court, but allegations of this sort can have real consequences nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. So just to reiterate, it's 6:14 a.m. on a Wednesday. This story, which really sort of started appearing on CBC.ca, the Vancouver Sun's website, et cetera, around 4:45 yesterday. The reason Jason outlined all of those questions is because those questions largely remained unanswered given the relatively minimal amount of time between the story coming to light for us publicly and then our ability to digest the information and get everything ready. So we thought the best approach this morning would be to lay out the facts as clearly and most factually correct as possible, which we hope that we've done, and then ask the questions without speculation as to the answers, but ask the questions that we have in light of a story which is approximately 12 to 13 hours old. We will continue to update the story throughout the day and reset. While we're usually a show that kind of works in linear fashion and doesn't necessarily loop back to stories that we've already covered over the course of the 3 hours, we do have to acknowledge that people are going to be tuning in this morning to get some sort of update on a story that they saw come across their laptops or iPhones or whatever last night. We will continue to do that throughout the day. We'll also remind you that if you want to download the podcast, Apple, Google, or Spotify, every hour of the Halford and Brough podcast is uploaded shortly after the hour is complete. So we will give that to you as well throughout the day. Now, as it pertains to other business with regarding the Vancouver Canucks, the Canucks on the ice did return to practice yesterday, and there was no shortage of updates from the team. Unfortunately, a lot of them had to do with the relative lack of health with regards to the Canucks. So we'll run through this real quick. You know about Brock Besser. He underwent hand surgery on Monday. The Canucks have announced that he will miss 3 to 4 weeks recovering from the procedure. We did get an update on Ilya Mikheyev yesterday. He has a lower body injury sustained from that hit against Calgary in the split squad opener. Mikheyev has a lower body injury. He is now out week to week. So what does it mean? It means that to start the season, this fundamentally important start to the season for the Vancouver Canucks, which coincides with a lengthy road trip, they are now going to be without two of their top nine forwards to start the season. What does it mean for Nils Höglander? Well, Höglander seems to be the large benefactor of these two injuries, at least right now. On Tuesday, he skated on a practice line at UBC with Elias Pettersson and Andrei Kuzmenko. He also got time on the second power play unit. Not bad for a guy that opened camp skating alongside Nils Amon and Linus Karlsson, essentially on the outside, looking in at the top four lines for the Vancouver Canucks. He also kind of suggested that he was happy that some of his early work in this camp, coming into camp as one of the fittest players, and also earning praise from Bruce Boudreau, resonated with him. So, again, turn a negative into a positive, turn a frown upside down. Nils Höglander, at current time, looks like he's going to benefit from what's happened with Besser and with Mikheyev.
I wonder how long Mikheyev's going to be out. Week to week with a lower body injury isn't very specific, right? And this is really unfortunate that the Canucks are already dealing with these injuries. Brock Besser, we talked about yesterday and how he, you know, wants to come into this season, being able to focus on hockey after going through so much personally last year, and now he's dealing with an injury right off the hop. Ilya Mikheyev, new player to the Canucks, a really important player to the Canucks. He's going to bring speed. He's going to bring two-way awareness. He was lined up with Elias Pettersson and Kuzmenko right out of the start of training camp. Now that's been thrown into flux. Unfortunate for Petey too, right? Like Elias Pettersson. I'm sure he wanted to try and develop some sort of chemistry and at least see if it was going to work with two new players. Now he can still develop some chemistry with Kuzmenko, but Ilya Mikheyev is the established NHLer in all this. It's weird, by the way, that they don't know how Besser's injury happened, mm-hmm. or so they say. The reporters yesterday were kind of like, wait, did you say you don't know how it happened? Like, what happened there? And Bruce Boudreau was just kind of like, yeah, we were watching and he was like shaking his hand and like he didn't know what happened. I'm like, how do you have a hand injury that requires surgery?
Major surgery.
Or as A-Dog would say, major surgery without really knowing what happened. I don't know. Maybe this was a lingering thing. Maybe he took a shot and it was like something was ready to happen and it finally happened. I don't know. But the depth of the Canucks up front is already being tested, and poor Bo Horvat. Now he's got Podkolzin and Lazar on his wings, and no disrespect to those guys, but Podkolzin is still a young player finding his way in the NHL, and Lazar is a bottom six guy who was signed for multiple years at near the minimum cap. Those are Horvat's wingers now.
Well, also,
and this is a guy that's had multiple wingers over the years, and he's trying to find some continuity as well.
And, of course, Lazar largely signed to be a center, not a winger. So not an ideal situation for the Vancouver Canucks as they inch closer and closer to the start of the regular season. A couple other things we want to run through in what happened before we move on to James Sharman at 6:30 here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. We mentioned it off the top. Yankees win yesterday 5-2 over the Jays. They clinch top spot in the AL East. They get an automatic bye to the American League Divisional Series along with the Houston Astros. That puts the Jays in the driver's seat for that top wildcard spot, but there's still much to be determined there. It is the first pennant, the divisional pennant, that is, for the New York Yankees since 2019. Also the year in which Aaron Boone won his first title as a manager. The other big story yesterday is that the Maris family tour continues. It is now 7 games since Aaron Judge hit home run number 60, and they continue to wait. Judge got walked 4 times last night. It has been a series in which he was a very large presence, make no mistake about it, and there was some timely hitting throughout the early parts of this series, but the reality of it is this thing continues on. Now, the interesting thing moving forward is that the Yankees have clinched. The Yankees are not going to surpass the Astros. They are locked into that spot right now where they're going to get that buy-in to the ALDS. There has been some discussion that Judge could start getting off days here, including today's game, because the Yankees would have a day off after that, so an extended break. So there's no really telling how long this will go. Because remember, when Judge hit 60 to tie Babe Ruth, everyone was talking not about breaking Roger Maris's record. They assumed that was a given. They were talking about how high this total could go. Because at the time, Judge was on pace to hit 66 home runs. Now we're looking at something a little bit less from Aaron Judge.
That's pressure, right? When he's got 8 games left, they want him to hit 2 home runs, you know, at least 1. And a lot of the times, he's going to get walked,
mm-hmm.
right? Or they're going to pitch
like the 4 times he got walked yesterday.
Yeah, he's going to be pitched really carefully. So again, if you're just joining us, we're in this, they call it a podcast studio. And I guess the mics here are really sensitive because, so Halford, you know, normally when we turn our mics off, our individual mics, nothing we do can be picked up. So whether we're sniffing or blowing our noses or drinking our coffee or crying a little bit, sometimes we have a little bit of a cry, like kind of a little bit of a sob because it's so early and, you know, the Canucks. Mm-hmm. So we can't do that. Even typing has been picked up. So we are both loud typers. We're like aggressive typers because we're alpha males.
Love to punch the keys.
And that's how alphas type. So we're going to have to be cognizant of that. Your mic is picking up what I do, and my mic is picking up what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting today. I'm sorry to anyone who's listening and gets annoyed by our little sounds that we make, loud typing, sniffing, again, the sobbing, but we will try to do better. James Sharman is going to join us coming up next. I have a lot of questions for James about England. Ooh. Mike will start about Canada's performance against Uruguay and, to a lesser extent, Qatar. I will say that it's cool to watch Canada play against these types of countries, Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
Like Suarez and Nunez hooked up for a goal.
Very nice goal.
Yesterday, Suarez with the cross and Nunez with the header.
Former Liverpool Uruguayan to the new Liverpool Uruguayan connecting on the second goal.
Yeah, but like these are big names, mm-hmm. right, in the world of soccer. And this is what you get when your team qualifies for the World Cup. You get these friendlies with big soccer countries. Before it would be like, Canada has a friendly with Northern Ireland, you know, or something along those lines, and no disrespect to Northern Ireland, but they were probably sitting there going, oh, God, again with Canada. Like, well, who cares, right?
You put it in your notes. I don't think I can go back to watching Curaçao now, and it's true.
Yeah, I can't go back to what are some of the other teams that we've had to, like, I've seen a lot of Cuba.
I've seen a lot of Haiti matches.
A lot of Haiti. Yeah.
I don't want to hate on Haiti.
No. But I am enjoying this, and this is why, first of all, I'm really going to enjoy the World Cup, going up against teams like Belgium and Croatia and Canada. I know they're an underdog to advance, but if they advance, imagine who they could play next after that. And then I hope it's not just kind of a flash in the pan. I hope this builds something here in Canada, and it's not just like we'll be 20 years later and be like, remember Alphonso Davies' team that he dragged to the World Cup? We're like, yeah, that was nice. When's the game against Curaçao?
Speaking of Alphonso, a little bit of hero ball yesterday from Alphonso Davies, especially in the second half versus Uruguay. So I want to ask James Sharman about that as well. If he does maybe feel the responsibility to carry this team in these high-profile matches against international stars, because he is one of those aforementioned international stars. So as Jason mentioned, as I mentioned, James Sharman, Footy Prime Podcast, and Sportsnet soccer analyst is going to join us next. We have a big show ahead. If you want to get your What We Learns in, you can do so now. Hashtag them WWL. You can send them to the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket at 650-650. We do have access to said in basket in our new alternative studio here. So you can get those in. We'll do those at 8:30 in that final hour with Murph and then What We Learn. 7:30, Arash Madani is going to join us to talk Jays and Yankees, more specifically the Jays, though, and Vladdy Guerrero. We will play that audio about Vladdy Guerrero not running hard enough from John Schneider yesterday. So we've got a lot more to get into on the program, but coming up next, a little footy talk with James Sharman from Footy Prime. It's all right here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Brough.
Injuries are going to happen. That's the nature of the beast. So, I mean, when one guy goes down, another guy's got to step up. If they're good enough, they'll make it tough on anybody that returns. That's the way I would look at it if I was a player. What a great opportunity.
7:03 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. North Star! Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. We are also brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. If things sound slightly different today, that's okay. It's natural. We are coming to you from sort of the Kintec studio. Our big old-fashioned studio that we're normally in is being renovated. So we're in some kind of hybrid podcasting studio slash closet for the time being.
Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 1,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintec.net. I feel like I sound really good on this mic, though.
You do. You have a very...
Hi there, everyone.
You have a very sultry voice this morning.
I think it's just strong. It's strong. Listen to that. Strong.
Strong. Yeah. You know when you're
We are like college kids. Like our first radio station.
So dumb. Talking over each other constantly. Like, listen to my voice. Low, 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 low. look at the microphone. You have mentioned in the past that sometimes that when you're feeling a little bit under the weather, you actually get that cool voice that you can't get in normal
times. But I actually
feel
good and I still... Feel smooth.
You get the sniffs a little bit. That too. We've both been battling cold. We're warriors, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's hockey players, and then there's us on the warrior scale in terms of playing through the pain. Okay.
And then actually, it's funny because actual warriors are below us.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is very true. You heard that clip coming back from break. That was the 16th most handsome coach in the NHL. Also the Canucks head coach, Bruce Boudreau, talking about the injuries that his team has sustained, how it provides an opportunity for some other players to step up. And that was one of the big stories in a macro story yesterday was from our good friend Elliot Friedman, he of Sportsnet, saying that according to multiple sources, NHL teams have now been given some guidance. Yes, guidance on where the salary cap could be going over the next few seasons. We actually had a text in to the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket at 650-650. It's unsigned, so it's from Gary, and Gary writes, why is everyone so certain the cap is going up? Inside the sports bubble, is anybody noticing what is going on with the economy in a gate-driven business? Who is going to be able to afford tickets? Well, Gary, all I can say is this. Friedge, in what he called projections and educated guesses, said that the cap could rise as much as $10 million over the next few years. So we all know where it is right now. $82.5 million is the ceiling. You can expect another incremental bump next year where it gets to $83.5. The end game is where you get to $88 million, and then you start going north of $90, which will be good news to a lot of NHL players, including Elias Pettersson.
Yeah, Elias Pettersson has 2 years left on his bridge contract, so those will be flat cap years. But when he's a restricted free agent and won't have many restricted free agent years left, it'll be mostly UFA years. For example, if they sign him to a one-year contract, that's bad news for the Vancouver Canucks. So they'll be looking, hopefully, assuming Pettersson plays well over the next 2 years, to lock up Elias Pettersson to a long-term contract, probably an eight-year deal, and there's going to be more cap space there. So that's good news for Petey. Here's what I was wondering about when I read this report, because it wasn't necessarily Elias Pettersson. Even though it fits nicely, it's like, oh, that's nice for Petey. It's going to be flat for the next couple of years. But as soon as he's a free agent, the cap goes up. That's good news for him. How might this affect Bo Horvat negotiations, knowing that this rise is going to go, it is coming, probably, assuming the world doesn't fall apart again, which it could. Seems like it's hanging by a thread every day. Because I can imagine the Canucks sitting there in negotiations and going, "Oh, Bo, we can't give you like a ton of money. Look at some of the contracts that have been signed. They, you know, there's a lot of people that have taken less money in this situation because of the flat cap." And he'd be like, "Yeah, but that'll only be like 1 year of my contract in a flat cap environment. The rest, everything is going to go up, and we're going to see salary inflation again, and we're going to see these GMs come out of their boots on July 1st or whenever the free agency date is. And it'd be like, they're going to, you know, be dumb again with the contracts. Like, why can't I get some of that in my contract?" So it's almost like bridging two different eras.
Mm-hmm.
You got to bridge the flat cap era with the, let's call the next era, the back to normal era. And I wonder if that is a challenge in negotiations going forward, because from all we can surmise, this is just a matter of money and term. Because here's what we know about the Horvat situation, right? He wants to stay in Vancouver. He's the captain of the Canucks. The Canucks have said they want to keep him. So normally when that happens, you find a deal. But sometimes it gets complicated. Because if I'm Horvat, I'm sitting there going, "Hey, with all due respect to Brock Besser, I think I'm a more important player for the Canucks than Brock Besser." And you could make that argument. You might disagree with it, but you could make the argument. So his cap hit, Brock Besser's on a 3-year deal, is $6.7 million, or almost there. So Horvat's probably wants that. And a lot of the time, you don't necessarily look at the league-wide comps. You look at the guys on your team. And I think that's why the Canucks ran into trouble in some cases with their team, like in the last few years. You know, people will be like, "Well, this guy's making this much, and he ain't doing much. So I better get more than that." So it's a complicated negotiation in that sense. There's a lot of factors, and there are arguments that both sides could make that are legitimate arguments.
Sure. I think from a Canucks perspective, the goal is to, and it's a tricky one, make no mistake, is to figure out how to get a guy on a deal that's going to look really good when the cap opens back up. Remember, we're all working on a premise here that when the return to normal happens, it means all business returns to normal. This is a league where from 2013 to 2020, right before the pandemic hit, the cap rose every single season, like clockwork. Now, the amounts that the cap went up weren't always equal and parallel. Sometimes there was a bigger jump than others. But the reality was, and Gary Bettman and Bill Daly would come forth and say it, revenues are growing, the business is healthy, ergo, we're going to raise the cap. The cap is going to go up. There's kickers in the CBA, et cetera, et cetera. Then it hit a standstill, right? The world came to a pause. Economics went bananas. And all of a sudden, everyone had to operate in a flat cap. I bring this up because, and as you said in the notes, a guy like Connor Garland, with his contract and with his output and with his age, should be a valuable contract. It should be seen as an asset. It should be seen as a good deal for a good player that is portable and movable. But under a flat cap world, and this is an astute point that you put here, the flat cap is just decimated values for guys like him. So before I let you go on the Garland thing, I'll say, going back to Horvat and everybody else, your goal is to find a contract that in the new economy is going to be seen as a good deal. For example, Quinn Hughes. Mm-hmm. Quinn Hughes at under $8 million is a great deal now. Imagine if the cap gets raised to $10 million from its current total. Getting a player like Hughes who can do what he can do and play the kind of minutes that he can play and give you the kind of output that he can give you at under $8 million might not just be a good deal. It might be one of the best deals in the NHL.
The Pettersson negotiation is going to be so interesting. I mean, obviously, a lot depends on how Pettersson plays. There is a chance that if Pettersson doesn't perform for the Canucks over these next 2 years, if he doesn't pan out into the player that we all know or we all hope he can be, and I think he can be, but the Canucks go like, "But I don't even know if I want to commit to you," right? I think one of the big reasons that Pettersson did sign, the main reason Pettersson only signed a bridge was the Canucks had salary cap issues. They couldn't afford to sign him long term. So they signed him to a bridge that brought his cap hit down. But I also think that when he did sign that bridge, there were people in the organization, especially the way he started last season, that were like, thank God he signed a bridge.
Sure. I don't doubt that for a second.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there were some people, and rightfully so, that had some long-term contract trepidation.
Sure. Yeah.
About Petey. Now, we got a bunch of people weighing in to the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650 saying that that was a mistake. It might have been a mistake in hindsight. That is the core issue with how the NHL is currently constructed, is the way to win the game, for lack of a better phrase, the way to win the game is to make long-term bets on a short-term body of work. I don't think I'm wrong on this one. Is you get a player and you get him in the system, and hopefully over the course of his ELC, you get a real clear example of what he's going to be or what you hope he's going to be at the NHL level. Your next move is to try and lock him up long-term for a number that's going to benefit your club. That's, I think, every general manager's goal. And that's why you see, at times, these guys acting like speculators and traders. I always kind of allude to what Jim Rutherford did in Pittsburgh with John Marino. They had a real small sample size. They liked what they saw, and they said, let's try and lock him up for a longer term than he would even expect, like 6 years or whatever it was, at a rate that will make him excited and be beneficial to us. Because remember, when you sign a young guy and you throw $30 million total in front of him, just say hypothetically 6 years, $5 million, that's life-altering money for a young guy. That is, I've made it. That is, I am very happy with my financial reward.
I'm going to stop working out.
Right? You put $3 million in front of Bruff and I, never mind 30, we're like, we're done.
Do you know how many boxes of Oreos I can now afford?
Like countless. You could own Oreo if you wanted to get in on the ground floor.
Getting back to the Garland point, and this is a minor point, but I don't know. You actually don't know if it is a minor point, because I think the Canucks still could be, depending how the season goes, they might want to make their significant changes next offseason. I think, do we all agree that the Canucks wanted to make more changes this offseason than they did? And the situation just didn't allow it?
I think sometimes we unfairly infer things on this show, like our wild, baseless speculation.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case here. I think it's fair to infer that the Canucks wanted to do more than they did this offseason.
Okay, so hopefully asset values recover. God, I sound like a financial analyst. Like, hold on, well, where are bond prices going? But where are Connor Garland prices going? Because, again, in a normal world, Connor Garland is 26 years old. He's a good player. He has what they call cost certainty, and he's got a cap hit below $5 million. There's a lot to like about that. But here's what happened. NHL GMs went, what are your most important players? Centers and defensemen. Not wingers.
Sure.
And the Canucks have a lot of cap space tied up in wingers. You know, whether it's Garland or, you know, even Tanner Pearson at just over $3 million, Brock Besser at over $6 million. That is quite a bit locked up in wingers. And those were the guys that we were talking about could be moved, right? Especially Garland and Pearson. I know we talked a lot about JT Miller. Some people do consider him a winger. The Canucks consider him a center. But the hope is that if the Canucks do want to make changes and say a guy like Connor Garland is put on the trade block, that his value has recovered a little bit because people look at the situation and go, you know what, that might actually be a good deal, because with the added cap space, prices once again are going to get bid up for these wingers. It's going to be interesting how this all shakes out for the Canucks, because of a lot of this analysis could change, right? Like, let's say the Canucks have a great season, right? Well, we all want that. But I imagine if they have a great season, that Pettersson is a big part of it. And then Pettersson's going to have the hammer in negotiations. And remember, if the Canucks want to, and if Pettersson wants to, they could work on an extension next summer. Mm-hmm. They don't have to wait for his contract to expire. We've seen that actually quite a lot. We've seen a guy, all right, last year of his deal. I mean, we saw with JT Miller, a bit of a different situation because JT Miller is a pending UFA and Elias Pettersson is a pending RFA, but he's so close to UFA status that you don't really want to mess with things. So that is something that they could, in theory, tackle this coming summer. But, you know, who knows what we're going to be saying about this Canucks team at the end of the season. I actually, heading into the season, I feel like I have, most of the time I know what's coming. Like I have a general idea of how good the team is or how bad the team is. And for the most part, I haven't been surprised or not, you know, it's mostly played out, right? I was a little bit surprised how badly they started last year, but I didn't think last year's team was very good. Heading into this season, I really don't know. I don't know if you have a good sense of it because, you know, I look at this lineup and I go, you know, if everyone's healthy up front, they got good players. They obviously got a great goalie. They got one of the best young defensemen in the league in Quinn Hughes. That's the good stuff, right? I look at this roster and say, this roster has every chance to make the playoffs. But I also look at the roster and go, we all know my concerns about the defense. And I have a slight concern about the quality of the backup goalie just because we don't know if Spencer Martin can do the backup goalie job on a full-time basis. I hope he can. I'm optimistic he can, but we don't know for sure. I have concern about the makeup of the forward group. And this is something that I agree with Drance on as much as I don't like to. I look at that group and I go, you know, there's talent there. Is there enough two-way ability? Is there enough high hockey IQ ability on this Canucks team? So I look at them and I go, man, I could see the Canucks getting 100 points this season. I could see them getting 80.
It's fair. I have a very clear understanding of what I think the team is going to be, and this isn't exactly revolutionary analysis here. It's that in order for them to be successful, the depth of the forward group and the caliber and quality of the goaltending specifically and really exclusively Thatcher Demko, if they're going to make the playoffs, that's going to have to outshine the gaps on the blue line. That your some of your parts, and this is real basic math, forward and goalie with the greater than defense symbol. And that's what it's going to have to be. Now, the question is how is that going to be orchestrated from the man behind the bench, Bruce Boudreau? Because I think a part of him, and this is probably in his wheelhouse given how he likes to approach the game, is going to have to cede the team over to, we have to let our offensive players do things that will allow us to score goals. So maybe a little bit less of system play and structure, a little bit more of freelancing and taking chances and maybe taking gambles and saying, JT Miller, do the things that make you JT Miller. Pettersson, same deal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Goaltending, to me, we probably don't talk about it enough because we kind of chalk it up to being voodoo anyway. And it's not really all that exciting to talk about because we know the stakes here. If Thatcher Demko is good and plays like Demko and plays a lot of games, they have a really good chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah.
If Demko is not good and doesn't play enough games and we start to see Spencer Martin, there's a wild card. And if Demko's hurt, I would say for any length of time, the season's probably shot. Because not only do you not know what you have with Spencer Martin serving in a backup role, trying to put him in at any time as a guy to carry the load is a really risky proposition because there's no history there and no body of work that he's done it. So to me, that's where I sit. And it seems like really rudimentary analysis to say the goaltending has to be good. But Thatcher Demko was their best player last year. I know that they say it was JT Miller, and I know some people will say it might be somebody else, maybe Quinn Hughes, possibly Elias Pettersson, but make no mistake, they don't go anywhere last year remotely close to the playoffs if Demko isn't playing, one, the amount of games that he's playing, and two, playing them at such a high caliber.
So we've had a few texts in. Did you guys touch on the Francesco Aquilini story in hour one? This text went on, maybe that's off limits for now. No, it's not off limits. It's in the news. Text goes on, big allegations. Yeah, serious, concerning allegations. We did touch on the story in hour one. We talked about it for 15, 20 minutes. We led the show with it. We're not going to shy away from it, but we also have to acknowledge that there is a lot that we don't know. So all we did really was talk about the allegations, which are very serious and disturbing to read, and also allow that Francesco Aquilini has denied those allegations, fully denied those allegations. We discussed a little bit about how this is going to affect the team from a business perspective going forward. Francesco Aquilini, through his lawyers, has released a statement explaining the situation in his words, and again, denying the allegations. But I do wonder how there's going to be, I guess, closure on the situation I don't know if that's the right word, a resolution on the situation. Like, people just want to know what happened. People want to know the truth, because we've got these very serious allegations on the one hand from his ex-wife and his now adult children. And those are on the record, right? They've been submitted as affidavits to not criminal court, but a court. And on the other hand, Aquilini is saying, I deny these allegations fully, and I'm not going to say much more because it is a matter before the court. The challenge is that the court the court case is not about those allegations.
Correct.
So the court may not necessarily rule on those allegations, or I don't even know if there is anything that they can, you know, rule on. There's like, they can maybe say, like, I believe the children, or I believe, you know, Francesco Aquilini, right? It's very complicated, but people, fans of the team and business partners of the team are going to want to know more. They're going to want to know the details. So is a statement from Aquilini, how long is that going to hold up? This, to me, doesn't really seem like a story that's just going to be like going away, or people will forget about it. Maybe it will, but I just doubt it.
So the Hour One podcast is available for download, Apple, Google, Spotify. And as Jason mentioned, the way that we are addressing the story, given I believe we are the first on Sportsnet 650 to dive into this story head first, is to, one, lay out the facts as clearly and concisely as possible, and two, and this is what we did in the podcast with regards to the Francesco Aquilini story, ask the questions and not speculate wildly as to what the answers might be, because there is a multitude of questions, and we understand that a lot of you might be asking them. Please also remember that this story has been in the public sphere for the better part of 14 hours, including overnight. So it's fair to have a lot of questions that remain unsolved and unresolved. We will do our best to keep you up to speed with everything throughout the morning, as we are here until 9 o'clock. And then I would safely assume that the rest of the programming on Sportsnet 650 today will address this story. We'll ask some of these questions. And if there is any news to put forth, or any statement on behalf of Francesco Aquilini or the Canucks, you could expect it to be covered here on Sportsnet 650. Speaking of Sportsnet 650, we still have an hour and a half of programming left here on the Halford and Brough Show. We are going to talk to Arash Madani from Sportsnet next about the Toronto Blue Jays. So whatever slim glimmer of hope was left for the Jays to somehow rally and catch the Yankees is done. The Yankees are your AL East champions. That now puts the Jays firmly in a race for the top wildcard spot for the playoffs in Major League Baseball. It was a very eventful night last night in a 5-2 Yankees win over the Jays. There were some heavy critiques lobbed at Vladdy Guerrero Jr. for not running hard enough at a time of the year where you need to run as hard as you can. So we will talk to Arash about all that, all things Blue Jays, coming up next. Don't go anywhere. Don't touch the dial. Keep it right here. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.